their career was not all that long and not all that significant. They had a couple of interesting hits in the mid-90s. I saw the Crash Test Dummies in 1996 in concert. They're a convincing, very interesting band in many respects, but fate did not write for them a very significant place in the history of rock. But what we find here is the title song off the Crash Test Dummies 1993 album, God Shuffled His Feet. And this song foregrounds the basic issues that I want to confront in all three of the songs we're dealing with today. What does it mean to have God treated as a comic figure, as a comic subject? What does it mean to confront lyrics in popular music that seem in many ways frankly blasphemous or simply confusing in their presentation of certain kinds of theological matters that may, to many of us, actually seem fairly weighty and serious and worth a serious reflection? Is there a sense in which this music can be said to be doing real damage to the work of the Christian church in the world, or is it in fact somehow bolstering that work? What do we do with this music? And as I've said, I want to warn you all in advance, I don't have it figured out. I'm not sure what you all will come up with to say about this song or any of these three, or what the right answers to those questions are that I just posed. Let's give this song a listen and see what you make of it. I'll throw this in the hopper to begin with. The first song that we hear, or first sound that we hear in this song, that's going to become part of the kind of percussion track of the music, is a record that may be in the process of skipping or perhaps has reached the end. We'll hear the scratch of a record and a sort of repetitive click of a vinyl record, one of those old-fashioned things, for the record. And you may decide this is significant, you may not. This is a 45 RPM record we're listening to, and we can tell because this click is happening at 45 revolutions a minute, which is to say the pace at which a single used to go, a single vinyl disc, which is to say that the tempo of the song is dictated by this sort of technological convention. I'm not sure what significance that holds, but that's the sound we'll hear to begin with. Then we launch into this song. See what you make of it. Thank you. The floor is open. What do you make of this song?
I think it's really sad.
How so?
Well, it's like he's speaking through the eyes of a child that don't understand.
Yeah. And the story about the boy with blue hair is somehow, in the way Peter was describing this morning, at Bible study, maybe a true story, but true and in ways that Peter got into, and we won't, but that there may be a reality to that story, that it may actually have a value. Other reflections?
That verse about it, nearly 1905 is one.
Yeah. How so? I mean, tell me more.
My kids are 12 and 14 now, and they wake up every day with blue hair. But I don't notice it quite so much. I'm a little more used to it.
Yeah.
And maybe I take it for granted and have tried to cover it up or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wish we could be ourselves.
Great. And the lesson I'm getting here is that God is telling them something. This isn't just nonsense that God is spouting. That's not the point. Or did anybody think that was the point? That when God actually opens his mouth to speak, goodness knows what's going to come out. It's just crazy talk.
I was struck by the fact they want to know. They're interested.
Yeah.
I don't think these are like just trick questions. I mean, it's kind of a look at the scripture and a promise in a garbled way. You know, I love that sentence. Your eye gets poked out in life, would it be waiting in heaven with your wife?
Right.
That takes about two or three stories and puts it in one sentence.
Yeah.
I think people want to know what's happening about. We've heard about it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unclear to us.
Yeah. Great. And there's that same bizarre sort of mashup in the first verse. You know, after 7 days, he was quite tired, so God said, let there be a day just for picnics with wine and bread. And obviously, there's this sort of Eucharistic imagery kicking in, but it's obviously the Sabbath we're talking about. And, I mean, everything, all the elements are there, but in this strange sort of garbled way.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard this song, but it just seems like the wrong question. I've been given all of creation and they're right. Asking God what he eats.
It's an odd paraphrase in a weird way of the creation story. And the middle verse, like, it's kind of like God talking about Adam and Eve suddenly realizing they were naked. whatever his friends going to think.
Yeah.
In a weird way. That's kind of far-fetched. But
yeah. That's a great thought, yes.
I guess my question is, who was the audience it was written for?
Yeah, whoever buys records.
I graduated from seminary in 1993.
Was it truly popular?
And you bought this?
Yeah, this is an album that we bought in 1993. In the middle of our 20s.
I want to come back to you and the seminarians, but
I'm out of this. But in terms of pop.
But this is, I mean, the band was put out there as just part of that great sort of wash of mainstream sort of rock and roll music, vying for its place in the top 40. That is, you know, it's a sort of secular undertaking writ large. But we could say more.
I go back to this Nicodemus thing, you know, and don't take this as condescendingly. A lot of times as a pastor, I want to talk about heaven. I want to talk about the joy of blue hair. And all people wonder is, will I get my eye back?
What age will I be in heaven?
Well, musically, it's kind of a reggae kind of a... It's a real heart thumper. It's alive.
Yeah.
The song gets alive when that bass kicks in. Yeah. And it just is a pulsating, good feeling in the chest to hear it.
Yeah.
That's the secure thing for me in this song. The lyrics may be a little bit garbled, but the sound is kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I had set all this up. You know, I've got this term novelty song in the title of this session and sort of set all this up as if to say these are sort of impious songs, perhaps blasphemous songs. There's nothing confessional going on. No sort of serious theological work. Am I wrong about that? I mean, is that being overly dismissive of this music? And is this,
yes,
in fact, music that seminarians can take seriously?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This, I think this is brilliant work. And I think they caught the entirety of God's creation in these verses.
Do you want to say more about it?
I think there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. There's an entire story of God's reality in the universe in this. So, yeah, I think so. So it, you can call it a novelty piece, which it is, and a lot of people will chuckle at this.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole lot to laugh about in this.
Yeah.
But this is a serious work.
Full of instances of people asking God a lot worse questions than this.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a lot more, if you want to call it, blasphemous. So.
Yeah. Great.
I don't find blasphemy in it at all.
No,
I think,
I don't either.
Don't you? At the deeper level, it's really something.
Even in the way that God shuffles his feet. People are staring him in the face. He's kind of looking at the ground, kind of trying to pick his words or something, or is that not how you take it?
That's, you know, that the title of this piece is God Shuffles His Feet, and that's, whoa, there's something big there.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I love that. It's almost like God is vulnerable.
Yeah.
God isn't pulling out the lightning and the thunderbolts.
Yeah.
God is vulnerable.
Well, and I wonder, too, these questions, you have to eat or your haircut. Somebody who's had just a very basic understanding of God as a child, but then has grown and not explored anything deeper theologically, will still have these kinds of questions, you know, and you wonder if this is bringing them into something deeper. I don't know. I mean, I could see somebody who maybe went to the vacation Bible school and then had no other experience with the concept of God and philosophical theological thought would still be wondering, well, gee, when you get to heaven, are you,
Well, the other thing too is this last stanza here, but was that a parable or a very subtle joke? Oftentimes Jesus told a parable and then he had to turn around and explain the parable. Because
Yeah.
they didn't get it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's about like trying to explain a joke. If you're not getting it, then, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what is the line, we'll come in a second. I mean, the line between the parable and the joke is often a pretty narrow one. Look, you people, you have the faith of a mustard seed. You can move mountains. I mean, is that a joke or is that a parable? What is that thing? Those kinds of things that Jesus throws on people.
The two stories, a couple stories, are coming to mind from the Gospels. The when it's a very God shuffled his feet kind of moment and looked around at them. And Thomas is the one who said, "I beg your pardon." He was the only one who was quite had the courage to say, "I don't get it.
Yeah.
I just don't get it."
Yeah. Now, answer me this. I mean, you all, this is wonderful work. I'm having my eyes open here about this song. If we actually had the creators of this song in the room, the fellow who wrote this song, and unhappily I'm not remembering his name right now, but our lead singer, and we said, "You seem to be a deeply religious person, and we appreciate that you have brought your faith forth in the way that you have." What do you think he would say? Do you think he would say right on, or would think he would say us, you know, you're really not getting it. I mean, what would he have to say?
I kind of think he'd shuffle his feet.
And you always stare right back at him. Yeah. And do we care? And I guess this is the big question for me, is that yes, I listened to this story about blue hair, and I'm not sure but what our songwriter is, in fact, sort of making fun of God, that our songwriter's reveling in sort of inversions of things that Christians ostensibly hold dear, and that, I mean, I have this sneaking suspicion that our songwriter may not be an especially Christian person at all, but the things that I bring to that verse, the things that you bring to the verse about the boy with blue hair, those are my things, and perhaps it doesn't matter. Is that the case? It doesn't matter. It's our song now.
Well, that was going to be my comment when you, if you asked, you know, if this were irreverent. I have, a suspicion that God would say something like Hubert Humphrey said, which is, "I'm not so concerned about what they say about me as long as it's about me." You know, and so you get a song like this, and it's raising the issues.
Yeah.
And then the individuals react to that, and that can be a very important match.
Great. Very well said.
We talked last night about Bruce Springsteen, and the song Born in the USA came up as having been one that was greatly misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Do we care about that? Those of us, you know, on the left who found that song by those on the right.
Why
did
that
bother us? Did that bother us? And would it bother the author of this if we Christians were taking this song up as an anthem when in fact it might not be?
I was seeing it in church and stuff. Well, I mean, not to...
that one going.
Your thoughts, yeah.
I still come back to my same question about what audience was this written for? First of all, I think it has to be for an audience of people with religious belief, or it wouldn't mean anything. You have to have a somewhat significant, sophisticated religious background, or you would not understand the parody in it. So that's number one.
Yeah.
And number two, my feeling is that this someone who has come from a religious background and who now is very seriously questioning that religious belief, but he hasn't rejected it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is expressing his he is both asking some questions but also saying you just can't be serious believing this.
Yeah.
But he's not willing to reject it outright.
Right.
So that's the perspective I come from.
Angst is the word that's come to. Great. Yeah.
Have you seen Bono talk about religion?
On occasion.
It's the kind of he grew up and accepted the religion that was offered, I think, in his teens, but found it distasteful after a while, especially as his band was rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And the style of it became overwhelming for the Christians he hung with. And so he's come back around at it from really different directions, and he's done majorly. I mean, he really turned it upside down for a while. It's an interesting story, and I think these guys would probably have a good conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking here about the Irish lead singer of the band U2, and we will be listening to U2 Sunday Bloody Sunday on Thursday and talking a bit about where he was, at least at that point, fairly early in his career. That's a great observation.
The other thing I like about it is that the door is so open. There, God's looking at them, and the people are looking at him, and nobody's backing down.
Yeah.
my 12-year-old's a little.
Peter, did you have one thought you want to get in before you head up, Peter?
No.
No. Good. Yeah, my kids are 12, 14, and 17, blue hair all around, and I know exactly what you mean.
One re-spin on what you said about maybe it's our song now, and then maybe it's God's song now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, I mean, as I read the refrain, he's portraying God as being somewhat diffident.
Mm-hmm.
But the people are the ones who are being assertive. They're staring. God is glancing and shuffling. And I found that very interesting. And to me at least, I don't see this as a person who's really doing a parody. I see this as a person who is still open, but is very much struggling with these issues.
God on the spot?
No, I'm talking now about the author of the lyrics. You know.
But is he putting God on the spot with it?
Well, I would guess. That he's wondering why God hasn't given clear answers.
I don't really think we can assume that it's a matter of one side or another. It's a matter of endorsing one idea or another. I think that is, especially since it's the actual title of the album as well, and other songs in the album, talk about mystical things and put them in more kind of human terms and talk about how there's certain things you just can't understand. And I think it's more of a way of, from my perspective, let's imagine this in a human-to-human kind of relationship. And it just kind of, I think rather than saying, yay, I'm pro-Christian, or no, I'm anti-God, or whatever, I think it's really more of a matter of, well, let's just say that the relationship was just one human to another. God creates the world, creates some people, they hang out together. What would that look like? And I think that's kind of more the perspective that's being put across. It's not a matter of he's trying to make a statement pro or against some great side, politically or religiously.
Yeah, great. That's somehow just keeping the conversation alive or something, just setting the imagery out there and letting it work.
Well, I look at this, not that you have to have a religious background, because I think we're all kind of instilled with a spark, if you will, a question. And I see that God is hanging out, if you will, but wanting the person, the individual, to make their own choice. So he's not giving a lot of answers. He's kind of letting things evolve, let people make their own decisions on, you want to hang with me or you want to do something else? But we all have that little spark of, there has to be something greater than this.
Do you think because we're all so different that God is saying, make your own decision about this? We all ultimately have to think about what we believe and what we accept.
Yeah.
And maybe by staring back at him and taking just that little part, he's saying, you know, you need to do some deciding yourself about what I mean, on your own terms.
I gave you a brain.
And whether we like the way God is being set forward here or not, the God I think that most of us probably came here believing in, the faith we subscribe to, that God doesn't offer any clearer answers to these questions than this God. I mean, this sort of funnier fellow, perhaps. But it's not like we're getting straight answers. There was another thought there.
Well, I kind of had a different point of view, and she articulated it better than I can. But as I read it, it's really not that we're to come to an answer. It's rather that we're to hold the question. He doesn't answer any of this. He's just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Hold the point of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly the blue hair, I found it interesting that some people found it sad. Mm-hmm. They found it poignant, but not sad, because he doesn't tell you that his friends did. did say he had a disease or anything. It's just the possibility. It's just out there.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I think the music itself set a mood. The way the music, not just the lyrics, but mm-hmm. the way the guitar was played and the rhythm of the song
yeah.
was, it wasn't somber, but it was heavy.
Yeah.
The voice carried depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a jovial voice. It was a voice that had thought a lot about what it was saying.
Yeah.
And for me, that it made that whole piece not a lighthearted, jokingly sort of piece, but more of a piece that I really wanted to. I love his voice.
Yeah.
I love the background music.
Yep.
And I thought it was. It left me with the feeling that this is a heavy piece.
Yeah, that's a great observation. But what about the record scratches? What about that 45 RPM single just kind of clicking its way through the whole track? What's it doing there?
I couldn't decide if it was God shuffling his feet or if it was the world grinding on. I couldn't decide.
I thought it was nostalgia for a simpler time when we were little in PBS and we did ask these questions
yeah.
and we often got answers to them
yeah.
from our VBS
yes,
teachers.
Yes, right.
That's
so
true.
Were your dog.
Very interesting. So the 45 RPM single.
That took me back to age 12.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Or
22. It's a lot.
Well, I'm going to put it a different way. Like, I listened to you last night. The rise of the 45 also brought into question religion. It brought the end of
yeah.
the 50s. It brought in rock and roll and secular culture and
yeah.
sexuality and.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. And this notion that the sound itself may actually have to do with the footsteps that the chorus is about, or the steps of the shuffling God, who knows? That's a nice thought. But you're absolutely right about the 45. Yeah, once you have hucksters driving around with their trunks full of 45 RPM records from the latest, you know, rock and roll artists, the nation's coming to an end. I mean, if these people are just out on the road selling this stuff to the radio DJs. Yeah, 45 RPM record did have a very important role to play. We should press on. But thank you all. This has been a fascinating conversation. I'm torn about what to do next. I have before me one song by Elvis Costello, which I think of as, he's just one of my greatest songwriters ever. And it's a wonderful song. But two sessions from now, Elvis Costello will get his moment in the sun. So I think if we don't have time to get to both of these, I think we should get to Joan Osborne first. Let us hear you take a look at Joan Osborne's One of Us and see what we make of this album. On the sheets, we may not have enough sheets to go around. It might be a sheet for every two person here, or two people here. And by the way, your sheet there very sagely offers the name of this album as being One of Us. I think that is not correct. I think this 1996 album is called Relish, that this comes off of, so historical note there. this song was, of course, a major hit when it came along. A quick show of hands, who is familiar with this song and knows it? Right. The song made a big splash at the time. Joan Osborne turned out to be kind of a one-hit wonder. This is about all that she would ever really have to show for herself and her career. But for whatever reason, this song really did seem to strike a cultural nerve of some sort. Again, there's strangeness with the beginning. And what that strangeness is, I'm not going to say just yet. But you'll hear it once we launch into this song. It begins with another piece of cultural detritus, not quite like a 45 RPM record, but something else. And so as we make our way through the song, I do want you to sort of keep in mind what happened in the first 10 seconds of the song, what you think it means, and then as the song itself unfolds, it too will give us plenty to think about.
Thank you.
our sound system here. I'll see if I can square it away. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to try that. Where do we go with this? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Well, I've always liked it.
Okay.
I like it anyway.
How so? Say more.
Well, okay, you're going to disagree with me. I think she's got some issues with the Catholic Church. I think she had some stuff, and she's bugged. You know, I don't know. I haven't given it a whole lot of thought, but
I don't think just because you have issues with the Catholic Church doesn't make it blasphemous. Catholic Church is not God. But
this is a result of a natural result of the Christian imagery of God as an Abba, as a father, as a person. And so, again, when you don't go beyond that imagery, this is what you end up with. It is calling on the phone.
It's somewhat spiritual. I'm not saying she's not. I think there's a lot of spirituality in it. It's not Christian spirituality necessarily. She's calling that to question, but it's, you know, she's looking for a different image, I think, than
a different image than what?
Than the Christian image, than the saints, and not all Christians even have that image.
Yeah.
When I heard it first, and I guess the one word that I took issue was the slob that always kind of helped that kept me from embracing it fully. But other than that, the answer. Well, of course, he's one of us. He has been, and he is today. You know, in us, at least.
Okay.
He made us in his image, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a big problem.
There's not another thought back there.
Well, I see some disparity between her first verse about if God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face and so forth? And most of the rest of it, particularly when you get down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth verses and on down. When then she starts talking about God being one of us, a slob like one of us, a stranger on the bus, so on and so forth. I see that kind of, she's got two questions she's posing, and that they're in some sense a very different question.
Mm-hmm.
It's not consecutive. It's not tied together, right?
Great.
I always thought the title should be "What if Christ is one of us?" Because this is talking about the incarnation. I mean, Christ came in 2,000 years ago, but had Christ not come 2,000 years ago, he may have had to ride a bus like one of us, had he come more recently. So I always thought this was very directly. Reference to Christ, because Christ actually was one of us, and then the sort of the irony that we don't recognize that, or we don't cherish it.
Great.
I don't know that she buys that though. The second verse. If I actually saw God, would I have to believe in all that? And if I have to believe in all that, if I see God, do I want to see it all? I don't know if she connects God and Jesus real closely.
That was the verse that did it for me.
Yeah.
That verse clarified to me that this is
the
real cutting. Yeah.
It's a really good question, though.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that she asks it. If I actually saw God, would I have to believe all that?
Right.
And what of all that do I believe if I think I have seen God?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's not an unprofound question. I mean, as we trace Levin, the second most important character in Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, if we trace the arc of his religious awakening to the end, at the end of the book, he is given a revelation. I mean, he suddenly perceives sort of human goodness as proof of the existence of God. And that's, of course, putting it too simply. But essentially, this is where he's left, is saying, well, of course God exists. Otherwise, sort of beneficence in the universe would be inexplicable. And so he's sort of jolly with this newfound realization. But then a few moments later he thinks, but hang on a second, what about sort of Jesus? What about all those trappings of the church? I mean, how do we sort of get from this basic revelation to all this other stuff? And as the book ends, Levin is saying, I'll work that out later. For the moment, I've got God. And this is where, about as far as Tolstoy seems to be able to get us at that moment anyhow, it becomes a mess pretty quickly once you start dealing with particularities. But there's no pain though.
See, I think this is the last song. I hate the song, but anyway. To me, they both talk about God as being the standoff, and this one we just look at him wandering away alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and is that why you hate the song, or you hate it for other reasons?
Why? I think it's, the song sucks.
And how so? On what terms?
And
what
terms? Just the
So I was really struck by the solitariness of this and the isolation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th verse, where it says, you know, trying to make his way home, he's trying to make his way home back up to heaven all alone. To me, if I kind of tied that in with the what if God were one of us, and I see this as reflective upon the often more than really describing God. I see a person here who's struggling with spirituality kind of on her own, which I mean, that's a darn hard way to do it.
Yeah. See, now, I thought, took that as another reference to Christ, that up to heaven all alone is the ascension.
Oh, interesting.
And, God, someone mentioned they didn't like this song because God was a marginalized figure and left alone, but Christ, of course, was a marginalized figure and was crucified after being tortured.
Yeah.
We haven't actually talked about this song, and I am Peter's wife, but I think that he's not talking about the music. Where the interesting insight is what if God was one of us? That's the hook of the whole song, right? That's the important question. I think it's interesting that God is great. First of all, and then it's also kind of musically boring, and that's the whole and all the trappings of the church. And then there's this, you know, maybe she's not the best messenger. Maybe she's got any, you know, envy. Maybe she's depressed. I don't know. But the question musically is the soaring.
It's not just because she's my wife, but I want to get off the bus there for just a second. There are many different things that raise. When it comes to these yeah-yeahs, obviously we're dealing with a variety of the kind of yeah-yeahs that just the previous year REM had put out in their Automatic for the People album. When we come up with things like Moses went walking, this is REM again, Moses went walking with a staff of wood. Newton got beamed by the apple good. Jesus, Israel, I was troubled by the terrible asp. And so it goes in Man on the Moon, this series of assertions about the world. But then with the yeah-yeah-yeahs, yeah comes to mean the opposite of itself, that it isn't an affirmation, it's a negative. The yeahs are totally evacuated of meaning. And what about this chorus? My wife Beth, brings it up. This is a curious song in the way that it really does just sort of simmer along through the verses, where the pitch, which is to say, this is as high as we go. We're just sort of lingering around a few of these pitches down here, but with that chorus and the big tagline, what if God was one of us, suddenly we just scale the heights. And so it goes, and yes, and suddenly we're up a fifth higher than we've been yet in the song, and this kind of, what is the meaning of that? What is the significance of that? Mm-hmm. Does that just...
It's beautiful.
It is?
The lyric line is really pretty there.
Yeah.
Is it kind of a ballad format?
Well, it is, in essence, a ballad format. And I've actually written an article about this hook, the sort of melodic thing that happens at the beginning of this chorus, which is a hook that's been used since time immemorial for hundreds of years. J.S. Bach made use of this same hook, this same way of putting pitches together just to make them catchy. Is there any significance to it, to this kind of release that happens with the, you know?
Well, if somebody was like her and was questioning, and then she had this notion of God as this distant person that's not connected, only talking to the Pope on the phone. But then she poses the question: well, what if he was just like me? What if somebody I could communicate with? What if it's somebody that? What if I could actually connect with God? What if he was so distant, not so aloof as I picture him in my ideas coming from what I understand of Christianity. And, but he's actually somebody that would mean something to me in my heart. And that's when the music lifts.
Mm-hmm. Great. And there's something like an epiphany threatens to take place, yeah.
Is this sort of like the end of Mark where it says, and everybody went home scared? And you wonder why does he end it that way? Is it, well, actually, it really is, everybody went home scared. what are you going to do? Is sort of the question. Are you going to be a neighbor then instead of a stranger or what?
Yeah, great. I hope these are rhetorical questions. Great.
Some people talked about doing this in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I question, maybe she's been, she and her friends have been talking among a big group. Maybe all these questions people are saying, what about this? In my mind, is she trying to bring out something into the public eye that a lot of people are thinking about, but don't say anything? She's trying. There's a longing there that people want to know some of these things, and to me, she's trying to bring this out in her music. Is this a possibility?
Great.
Well, the question, if God had a face, what would it look like? I think is so childlike. I think in terms of my grandchildren that, you know, now what do you think Jesus looks like? What do you think God looks like? And so I think I would go along with what she just said. It's a searching, but it's almost a childlike kind of inquiry.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, as I reread this, these are all posed as questions, but I'm thinking that really they're assertions. And that what we've got here is kind of just a Socratic method of promoting the answer. And I think you could read it as the whole thing, as her saying, hey, look, when you're on the bus and you see the person there alone, that is God. You are to reach out to that person.
Do we all agree?
Well, I would like to share a true story about this song. I was driving home late one night from Tacoma to Seattle, which is a really boring ride for me because I've done it a million times. And I was flipping around the radio stations, and there was a Dr. Drew call in.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a tough day.
And I listened, and this is a national call-in show where it's a medical doctor and then this other funny guy. And a lot of young people call this show, and they mostly talk about sexuality. And there was a young teenage girl who called in and said that she grew up in a family that was very hostile towards Christianity, any religion at all. And she said, this song had made her think, and she wanted to explore Christianity, but her parents would not hear of it. And she was asking for advice from Dr. Drew on how can I allow my parents to let me look into this a little bit more. So I say that for what it's worth.
I'm left agape by that story. Why call Dr. Drew?
He listens.
I mean, if the house were burning down, would she call Dr. Drew?
What was the answer?
Supported her and said, you need to pursue this. This is a yearning for you.
Yeah.
And I forget exactly how he helped her with her parent problem, but he really encouraged her to pursue it.
Wow.
For whatever the song meant, I think it probably brought more people.
We can all feel safe now.
So what about the opening there? This recording, I do not know of whom, and this is a song I don't know. One of these nights, I think about 12 o'clock, this whole world's going to reel and rock. I can't remember the next line. The Lord's going to come in his heavenly airplane. should we? Let's listen to this opening one more time. And I'm just curious, what are our producers doing with this song? I mean, that is, why begin this song this way? Let's give it one more listen.
Oh, one of these things, and that's all across. It's over, thundery land rock. Thanks be our trembling, thanks for the pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
And then the song kicks in. What's up with that? What does she...
She has a little riff in her song, which she begins, that almost mimics that tone of voice that woman there had. It's no words. It's just like she's just kind of singing along with that.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Interesting. Other?
Yeah. Did I hear when this song came out that that was her grandmother?
You may have. I didn't.
I'm wondering if that. But I thought she was being used as a foil for the author.
How so?
I thought that she was being held out as somebody who sees things as very settled and very answered and very knowable versus somebody who sees it as almost hopelessly unknowable. Or
Other thoughts or takes on... But at the same time, there is the fact that this, if we're grandmother or not, I mean, I'll have to poke around on this, but... I don't think we have any reason to doubt the sincerity of the woman who's singing to us about God and the heavenly airplane. I mean, that is, this is sort of good old-time religious music that we hear and we say, okay, that's it. That was the time when people believed. And in the same way that we talk about the 45 RPM record, perhaps taking us back, we listen to this old scratchy recording and we think, okay, well, that was a true, and that's true belief. And at the same time, it is totally outrageous that God is going to be coming in this heavenly airplane. And she begins this song, which seems to have its own kind of outrageousness to it, about God being a slob and riding subways and having a telephone that never rings and all that, you know, reminding us, hasn't there always been this kind of absurdity to the ways that people have tried to reach God through song? Is that finally sort of a good apology that she's putting forward for this song, or what do we think? Closing thoughts here. We're in the final stretch.
I find it interesting that she didn't end with a refrain.
Of the song? I mean, about the...
I'm sorry, couldn't hear.
Didn't end with a refrain?
Yeah,
that's
true.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. Other thoughts?
I just have one tiny point to make. The sentence that says, if God had a face, what would it look like? It reminded me of the deal that, you know, if you show someone a picture of their foot, they say, that's my foot. If you show them a picture of their hand, they say, that's my hand. If you show them a picture of their face, they say, that's me. So I don't think she's necessarily asking, what does God's face look like? I think she's asking maybe more, who is he? Just a little deeper version of just what does he look like.
Well, and that's a very nice place to end. We'll wrap this up. Thank you all very much for your input.